The Law Report with Michael Motsoeneng Bill
on Kaya 959.
Good evening to you and welcome to the Law Report. My name is Michael Motsoeneng Bill. Good to be with you this Wednesday evening. What are we doing tonight? Mlilo?
Open line, Mike.
Open line. That means we're talking about anything that you want to talk about. Give us a call, 086-000-959.
The Law Report with Michael Motsoeneng Bill.
All right. So we're having an open line. It's a show that's pretty much for you. Whatever you want to talk about. I like doing this segment because this is a part where I sit with Mlilo and we invite you to ask us pretty much anything that you have in mind, right? So it could be anything in labor law, whatever. I don't even want to list it because when I list it, it might be a closed list. But, you know, whatever you want to talk about, do give us a call. You can also send me a tweet. I'm at Motsoeneng Bill. That's my Twitter handle. Or send us a text message, 36959. All right. Or give us a call, 086-000-959. So...
And the earlier the better, Mike.
The earlier the better. If you phone it up, 5 to 9. 5 to 9,
and we must remind them that Mike is expensive, so this is your time to get it for free, you know. That billboard on the N1.
Listen, I am an attorney. You are an advocate. Now, so we all know what the word on the street is.
The word on the street is not always true. Eh?
Word on the street is like, yo, Shang advocate boy, I wager. You.
Yeah.
All right, so there's a lot happening in the news.
Yes.
And one thing that I picked up is... you know, we were looking at the story about Nigeria kicking Twitter out. That has some serious implications for, I mean, we can go for like diplomacy.
Yeah.
Information.
Freedom of speech.
Politics.
Yeah.
Freedom of speech. Right. So we should have a special show. And I suggest that we have that next week. If you like me, value freedom of speech, but also... value the autonomy of a country to decide who's going to play in their territory.
Yeah.
Listen to us next week because we're going to be unpacking it from all these angles. Diplomatic angle, freedom of speech angle.
Yeah.
Man, it's going to be
hardcore politics.
Hardcore politics, but right. So, but for now, this is your show where you tell me what you want to talk about. And Amos is phoning me on 086-000-00959. Amos needs some help.
Yeah.
We'll
send you flowers, Amos.
Amos went and he consulted a lawyer and they gave him a quote and he was like, I'm just going to call it. 959, Michael Motsoeneng Bill and Kobisi Tamlila. How are you, Amos?
I'm good, thanks to you, Mike, and Mr. Mlilo, Advocate Mlilo.
No, Mr. Mlilo is fine. Mike is very expensive.
So it's a promotion, Advocate.
I've got a situation here.
Yes, sir.
About a month ago, I had a bit of an accident whereby a lady, while I was driving, turning, she fell into my car and on the left-hand side. But then I called an ambulance as well as the police came through and they took a statement. Fast forward 2 weeks later, then get calls from the children of this lady. They're asking, trying to get money from me to say that she needs to go to the doctor. And I said, no, they should go to the hospital where the patient was and the file was open for that day. But then, and I told them not to call me again, but... Fast forward, this week I get a call from an officer who then tells me that he had received my case, but he wants now, as a police officer, he now wants my statement. Is it normal that once the Metro Police have taken the statement in, that now I get a call from the police station, now they want to have a case? And does it go through like that, and what the procedure would be in terms of legal recourse on this?
Okay, Mlilo, you want to give it a shot?
Yeah, I think just one issue. I got slightly distracted, so I might have missed something. I apologize, Amos.
It's Masejo. Masejo is posting us on the internet.
Yeah. So was there significant injuries or death?
No, there was no significant injury. Just as the old lady, and she fell. So most of the injury that she sustained or that she felt, it was when she fell onto the ground. So... the car, the weight of the car is about three ton. But now, like I said, she hit the car on the side. So as I was turning right, so I didn't hit her from the front. But now the issue that I have is that now I'm now getting this thing where they're trying to, it's either they're trying to extort money from me, or secondly, it's either maybe working with through with the police, because now I don't understand when it goes through like this. Isn't it the court that will then summon me if there's anything that I need to go and appear at the court?
Well, look, I mean, I think maybe let me answer it in the following terms, that it's an accident. It needs to be reported in the normal course. And the parties to the accident will have to give some form of version of what happened.
That's right.
And therefore, a statement would not be out of the ordinary in that sense.
Okay.
And it is from the statement that they are able to make a preliminary, what we call a prima facie view, as to whether or not in those circumstances, because remember what you're saying is your version for now, whether in those circumstances the driving would have been considered either negligent or reckless. So I wouldn't instantly dismiss it as something that that is out of the ordinary, to the extent that all that is required from you in the presently is to simply state a version of what happened, particularly if there was some form of injury.
But now, as the statement was given on the particular day, the day of the incident, to the Metro Police.
Yeah, it might be possible that in some instances you are required to supplement the statement, or maybe the statement was not properly taken. If the issue is simply about giving a statement, I wouldn't immediately panic. Anything beyond that would either have to be a determination by the prosecutors that maybe they consider your driving to have been reckless or to have been negligent.
Which is unlikely.
Which is unlikely.
Maybe no death. And
yes. The point, I suppose, for present purposes would be to say, to the extent that you're being required to simply give a version, either to supplement your earlier statement, or maybe that statement, you know, things do get lost or whatever might or might not have happened. If the issue is simply to say give a version in a statement, I think you would need to reasonably cooperate with them.
Okay. And just to add maybe this banner in this, because then having received that call from that warrant officer, and now when I start getting calls again from that family through as well, because it became now an issue whereby I start asking myself, what would have happened? Why are they contacting me? Well, the officials are, or if the matter is now under the police. Hence, I had a bit of a concern on that.
Yeah, I think that's a harassment issue. So what I would do is I would send them a message saying, stop calling me. And if you want to take any legal recourse, please proceed. And then I would block them. I'd use the block function that's freely available on your phone. and then if they do persist after that, then you report them to the police for harassment. Because the thing is, arising out of a motor vehicle collision, there are three possible things, right? The first one is that somebody got hurt, in which case they don't come to you, they go to RAF. Because RAF indemnifies you against somebody getting hurt. And then the other possibility is that you've damaged their car or their property, in which case they must sue you and stop harassing you. If you're not inclined to talk to them. And then there's the criminal aspect, which they would have to show that you drove recklessly. And if you didn't drive recklessly, because reckless driving is an offense, but making an accident negligently is not an offense. So there's something of a distinction between negligence and recklessness. And recklessness is a criminal offense. And that is a very difficult thing to prove. Often it's people who are driving at excessive speeds, not people who make an accident because they didn't, concentrate at a given time. So do that and I think you'll be fine. Jacob, you're calling from Johannesburg. Good evening and thank you for calling.
Hi.
Hello. Yes, sir.
I bought a house years back.
Mm-hmm.
What happened is I had a tiff with the seller because it was a private place.
Yes.
So he didn't want to pay the rate, but I ended up paying the rate. So the house now is registered under my name.
Yes.
My issue is when I bought the house, there were people already staying in the property. So the property is it's a semi-detached, so it has two properties in one yard. So the one side, the people are paying rent, but the other side, the people are refusing to pay rent. And I even went as far as opening a case to the police for non-payment of rent, not getting the money for rent, because they acknowledge the house amount, but they don't want to leave. So I tried every trick in the book to move from that house.
Mm.
So I don't know how can I get help so that I can make an eviction for them.
Sure.
So you said you have tried every trick in the book.
And I'm wondering the same thing you're wondering.
Yeah.
There's a little trick, which is to go to and bring an eviction application. Exactly. Have you tried that one?
There's one that you have not tried.
Take it. Have you brought eviction proceedings? Have you brought eviction proceedings?
Yes, the problem is with the eviction.
Mm.
I tried to raise some funds for it, but it's a challenge for me. But nonetheless, if I could get somebody who could help me with the eviction, and then now I'm in a comfortable space that I can probably pay for those evictions.
So you know, there's the if you really look for help. So, and this is what people often get wrong. So people, when this whole PIE Act came into place, people were quite disgruntled by it because, and to some extent, correctly so, depending on the point of view you come from. When the PIE Act, PIE is prevention of illegal evictions, right? Prior to that, if somebody was in your property, you give them 30 days and you ask them to hit the road. Now you got to follow a process in terms of which you got to have a judgment, and that judgment you get in terms of the PIE Act. So people believed that, and I believe this belief is not incorrect, that PIE sort of delays your occupation, but it protects the tenants. And yes, it is so to some extent, but not fully, because you can bring eviction applications, but also nothing stops you from pursuing your rent, right? Because a lot of people evict the person, but they don't sue them for the outstanding rent. So if you haven't been paying me for a year, I bring an application for that year, and I bring the application for up to the date that I get the eviction order. Because until the date you move out, you are liable for rent. So what that means is that nothing stops you, depending on what the amount of rent is. You can go to the small claims court, and I think with rent it could potentially be nice. And you can correct me because I'm thinking on my feet as I speak. But if you go to the small claims court, I can't remember what the jurisdiction is.
15,000.
If you go to the small claims court, it means you can get an order, which is a judgment, which is effective as a judgment. You get a judgment that says you're entitled to rent for last year, January to February, and then they don't pay. And then in March, you get another one for the. So you can be sitting with a series of judgments by the small claims court, which as you are pursuing the eviction order. So what that means is that people think that they can just take advantage of the PIE Act, which requires that there has to be a process before you are evicted. But you can also turn that around, and once they, as they think that they are winning, you can, once you've got the judgment, you can attach their salaries, you can attach whatever they might have, whatever they have in the house, you can attach that and recover that and use that as your rent. So you can take anything from the house except the bed and clothes. Those are the only things you can't take. So whatever, spill gas, everything you take except the bed and the clothes. So that's the way the law protects you against sort of your losses, because these people, and a judgment, the nice thing about it as well is that it endures for years. So somebody can get away and then you can visit them 5 years down the line and say, hey buddy, remember I have that judgment, now I'm here to take your TV again. Wait for them to buy another one, and so you can get your own justice. In a way, it's delayed. Indeed, it is. But I think that for somebody who, because somebody who owns property or owns bits of, you know, a space that can be let, don't feel disillusioned, because I think the rental business is still a good business. In fact, there are listed companies whose trade is only dealing in rentals. Some pay and some tenants don't pay. But those that don't pay, fight them. Give them a good fight. Let them never forget.
I couldn't have put it in better. And even in respect of the eviction process, the Act does allow for agent evictions as well. And you'll have to demonstrate the prejudice that you are suffering. Maybe you have a bond and you can't afford to continue to sustain that bond absent the payment of that rent.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore you need judgment in respect of eviction as soon as possible, so that you can put someone who's be able to pay the rent.
And the sooner you launch the eviction, I know it sounds a little bit expensive, but the nice thing about our country is that there's all kinds of lawyers that charge all sorts of rates. So I'm sure you can get a lawyer that is amenable to your circumstance, is new. You know, when I was starting out, I think I did exactly the same kind of job, you know, because like if you're passionate about something, doesn't matter if you got 1 year experience or 15 years, you're still going to be good. So I delivered even at 1 year experience, but for cheap, right? So get a lawyer who can do the work for your rate. And some people would say, if you say, I only have so much, they'll, you know, you'll get somebody that can help you. I'm pretty sure of it. Teboho, from Johannesburg. Good evening.
Hi, how are you, sir?
Very well, ma'am. How are you?
Good thing.
He's a sir now.
Yeah, and she's a ma'am.
Okay.
Yeah, it's that thing. Yeah, we call each other sir now.
I see.
Yeah. Yes, Debo.
Okay, I just have a quick question.
Yes, ma'am.
What does one do in a situation where they're going through a divorce and there are minor children involved? However, one of the parents is refusing to grant consent for the children to go through counseling, and he is the primary caregiver in this case at this point.
Why? So the one parent thinks, no, this child needs counseling, and the other one says no.
Yes.
Mm. Nila?
And mm-hmm. The other one is already attending counseling at school, mm-hmm. but the teacher at school suggested that she should get a professional one because they're just trying to help her cope at the moment, but they need professional help. But the father is saying, no, we can't take our children to counseling because it's for mad people and for white people.
Mm. And for people that need help.
He doesn't think his kids need help.
No. So I don't think it's a difficult. But let's see, Lemila.
Yeah, no. The when people are going through a divorce, I mean, I think evidence is abound that children suffer the most in circumstances of that nature. And if the parents are unable to agree on the appropriate course of action to take in circumstances like that, particularly where teachers who, in the ordinary course, have access to these children and can be deemed to be people who have an independent view about what they regard as the psychological condition of the child, you may approach the High Court as an upper guardian of minor children, get an order compelling that the child must be afforded the psychological help or counseling that you regard as appropriate. Mm. It's easier in your case because the teachers are already suggesting that.
Correct.
And the High Court would have to step in and give an order to that effect.
And so you know, we when we're speaking to the previous caller, Jacob, we said to him, you know, he's got to get a lawyer, find one that is inexpensive. And the reason why we didn't suggest what I'm about to suggest to your case is because his collecting revenue, he has a commercial undertaking, and there aren't any bodies or institutions or NGOs that would be enthusiastic about that kind of a case because he's able to be the landlord, right? No matter the scale. But in your case, you're having a situation where it's about the children, right? And there's a lot of NGOs that can help you, and the help is not very complex. It's the High Court says they are the upper guardian, and Lilo said that, of children. So if you go to one of these NGOs, they should very easily be helpful, especially if there's a letter from the school that says this is our view from the high level analysis that we've done, and we think that this child needs care. And I'm just wondering, does this other parent have access to the children on some days?
Not voluntarily. But the follow-up question was going to be, because the other parent is not really granted access, and they not...
Yeah, because I think that's the problem. Let me deal properly with your question after the break, because I feel myself rushing through it, and I might do you a disservice. If you've just tuned in, we're having an open line. I'm with Ngobisi Tamlilo. And we're taking your calls. Anything that you want to talk about, give us a call, 086-000-0959. We're back after this.
The Law Report with Michael Mutsuning-Bill.
Welcome back. We're taking more of your calls. Number to dial, 086-000-0959. Before I went to the break, Teboho, you were about to give me your second problem.
Yes, the second problem is that this parent, who's the caregiver at this point, is hardly ever at home. Now, it leaves the 13-year-old, who's the oldest, to be the responsible one taking care of the other siblings. So I wanted to know that if the other parent is to go and take the children while the other parent is out having the time of their life, will that impact on them not getting custody or shared custody of the children when the divorce is finalized and custody is granted?
No, but Mike, at all material times, the overriding principle is what is in the best interest of the mother and children. And to the extent that anyone can demonstrate that my conduct is motivated by what is in the best interest of the minor child, and as a matter of fact, it is in the best interest of the minor child, it can't be an issue. And secondly, the conduct of the parties now, of course, has an effect on who will ultimately be granted primary residence and care and so forth and so forth. Yeah. But there should be nothing that tempers your concern about your children. I mean, the parent that doesn't have the primary residence of the children and acting in the best interest of the minor children. And thirdly, it might be appropriate, given what I seem to sense to be what is happening here, to bring an application for the separation of the issues, the issue of the granting of the divorce and dealing with the issue in respect of rights and contacts of the minor child, so that this aspect is dealt with speedily and in the best interest of the minor children. There's a bit of stability there. So I would suggest that the issue of the granting of the order of divorce and the issue relating to either the welfare, the maintenance, and related issues in respect of children be separated and attended to almost urgently. Because if a divorce is as toxic as it appears it's going to be, then there will be other fights about spoons and pots and so forth, which will overly drag this whole thing long, and this problem around the children would persist. And the fact that she's a biological, the other parent is a biological parent, positions them quite strongly that I think that the appropriate course of action to take is to have the issue separated.
Yeah. So. On the question of just going and taking the child, my concern is, you know, you can't steal your own child as a matter of law, especially if there isn't a court order. So if the child happens to be living with the father because they just so happen to, and the mother takes the children, particularly in circumstances where they were left alone or whatever the case might be, you can't be said to have stolen the children because you have equal rights and responsibilities over the kids, which are for their benefit. The only thing that I think is counterproductive, because, you know, she's going to steal them, he's going to steal them back and steal them, and just going to go back and forth. And I find that these things about custody, they're quite complex, because how, for example, he came to live with the kids may be very complicated in and of itself, and may not be described in our show, you know. So you need to also look at that, because for some people they leave the child with one parent, and then for a year they gone, and then after a year they change their mind and they want to come back, you know. So these things are often common. I'm not saying it's a situation in your case, but what I think you should do is, or your friend should do, is that fight for a regime, whether she gets the kids two times, three times, whatever, fight for some kind of system. And I don't know whether that conversation has started. And during the time that the children are with her, then she can take them for the counseling or whatever. I'm not sure if that helps, because often people want to take it legal, but they haven't called and says, hey, former hubby or former boyfriend, can I have the kids? And that other person is sitting there is like, but you never asked for these children.
Yeah.
But you are coming now, you know? I don't know. Does that help you, Tebogo?
Yeah.
I think they must separate the issues, Mike.
No, of course, ultimately. Yeah. Ultimately, of course they should. You know, so if they haven't had a discussion around, and if the man says, you're not getting these kids, of course then she should go to court. But sometimes...
The thing here is that there's an issue. Things can be discussed as parents and agreement be made as parents. But then somehow we found children being involved. Now it's a matter of, but you didn't talk to the children. The children should also consent.
How old are the kids?
12, 13, 10, and 5. And they can only visit the mother over the weekend, and the therapist that is affordable is only available Monday to Friday. Nothing that is being said.
But when does the weekend start? Does it not start on Friday?
No, it starts on Friday afternoon. Yeah, and the thing is that when
are you suggesting that you don't see a way out in terms of a civil discussion between the parties to say this is in the best interest of the minor children and this is what must be done, at least in respect of the of counseling?
No, because I even have an email from the therapist confirming that the father refused to give consent. As a result, they can't help.
What? It doesn't make sense. You don't need the permission from both parents for therapy. It suffices if one parent gives you the permission.
And in particular, the therapist herself, she has a child that she's already diagnosed that needs help. And that help cannot be stopped at the instance of a father. She has a professional responsibility herself towards the minor child to say she's already made the diagnosis and she has she in a professional capacity to say this is what the child needs and there is consent from one of
the parents. So you can't, you can't go to the child's house and say, I want to counsel you. But when they've come to you, you can't also say, no. Yeah. So I think that the one way to solve it is have a discussion. If there's no discussion, if you can't have that discussion, then there's plenty of help, as I stated at the introductory part of this conversation. Peter, good evening.
Good evening, sir.
How are you?
Very well, sir.
You want to talk about the Nigeria Twitter ban?
Yes.
You know what I'm going to do, Peter? I want to talk about this, man, for a whole hour. So I'm gonna ask Masego to take your number, and we're gonna phone you, and I'm gonna start with you on Wednesday next week, because I want to hear everything you gotta say. Does that work?
When is the next week?
Wednesday next week. We're gonna call you because I want to hear everything you gotta say, my brother.
Okay. What time is that?
We'll phone you. Don't worry.
Okay. I need to know the time so I plan my time after
those. It's between 8 and 9
p.m.
Mm-hmm. Same show, on the same show, same time, next week, okay? Tembi, you're calling from the road. Good evening and welcome to you.
Good evening, and gentlemen, how are you?
We were very good, thank you. And yourself?
I'll be better after speaking to you.
I hope so. Now there's like pressure. Mlilo, don't say anything negative. If she's got a bad case, then she's got a great case. If you've just tuned in, I'm having a conversation with Mlilo, and we're taking your calls, 086-00-00959. Any questions that you want to ask about law, this is the show for you. Give us a shout. Yes, yes, Tembi.
Okay. I've got a very huge problem. It's regarding my house. Yeah? I was a first-time buyer of a house. So I didn't have a clue or where to go about. So the people that I've got, they took me to Blue Financial Services, no? For funding the internal, for taking the bond. The house was registered fine. But now, along the years, Blue got liquidated. And then another company took over. And then that company as well, I think it's Asset something. I can't remember the name. And then it died a silent death. There was no communication, no nothing with us. So now I'm trying to shift my bond from them to maybe a recognized financial services like both Standard Bank, Net Bank, or even FA Home Loans. So now the answer that I got from the financial services, they said to me, no, it's fine. Go get a statement so that you will know how much you could settle. But now I can't get hold of Blue Financial Services or the other company that took over after Blue.
Do you pay your bond?
I'm always,
do you pay?
I'm still paying.
Who are you paying?
I'm still paying.
Who are you paying?
I don't know.
I'm not laughing.
Don't laugh at me.
It's not me. I got a straight face and Lila just broke up.
No, but she doesn't have a problem, Mike. Honestly. Yeah. There's no problem.
Yeah. It sounds like it.
No, there's really no problem. Yeah. So
can I ask you practical and mathematical questions?
I beg your pardon?
Can I ask you a practical question? When did you buy your house?
In 2009.
Okay. And where is the bond being deducted from? So that 2009...
In my salary.
But I mean from your bank, I'm assuming. From your bank.
I beg your pardon?
From your bank account.
No, from my salary. Direct from my salary.
From your employer?
Yes.
So your employer pays these people?
Yes.
Okay.
Even now.
Okay. Who is your employer, if I can ask?
Department of Health.
Okay. So your bond, if I'm not mistaken, could be you would have gotten a subsidy, am I right? From your employer some years ago.
Yes, I'm still having the subsidy.
Now your employer potentially has a scheme, okay? Because when they it was such a nice thing they used to do. So if you work for the government, I'm not sure if it's the case now. If you work for the government in the olden days, if there's one thing you could have, two things. It was a house, shelter, right? And a good pension. And that's what they did very well.
No, that thing is not applicable.
Right. But just bear with me. I'll come to your specific problem. Just giving some background to this. So,
okay.
So what these subsidies did and how they established these subsidies, the employer would establish a company in conjunction with a financial institution. Mm-hmm. So your Department of Health or whatever the case might be would have either, they would either have a financial institution that they give a guarantee to, so they act as guarantor, or they work as sort of something of the same company. Mm-hmm. So you don't have a situation where your bondholder is untraceable. You don't have that problem. It is very much traceable. And the reason why Nilo broke out in laughter is not because he's a mean guy, because he thought like, oh, you are searching for somebody to pay.
Yeah.
So I can tell you now, if you stop paying that bond, somebody would knock on your door because somebody does exist. The only difference is you might have these things take different shapes and forms. You can imagine that in 1994, the subsidies for your department operated under a certain scheme, and that scheme took different shapes and forms. Talk to your employer, your payroll, okay? I promise you they'll give you an answer. If they can't give you an answer, I'm tempted to say, call me, I'll find you an answer.
Or instruct them to stop.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then the person...
Hmm? Oh, sorry.
It's your money.
But now I'm afraid if I tell HR to stop, and then I'm gonna be in arrears.
Yes, you will be.
Yes.
Yes, that's true. But I get it. Your problem is that you want to change,
or you want to know who
you want to change your bond holder, right?
Yeah.
You want to change them, and right now
I want to move.
You want to move, and right now I'm saying the difficulty is, you can't trace them and this company has moved and changed and so on and so forth. But I'm suggesting to you that if you speak to your employer, they will be able to tell you who you are paying, because they have somebody that they are paying every month, and that person, remember that your bond also shifts and moves over the years. So your employer, if you say to your employer, give me the person you are paying, I promise you the Post, South African Post Office, Transnet, Eskom, all of those things. Mm. They gave, there's townships, and then people came back with townships in Soweto that you point and you say that, I think the Mlapo, that area, you know, that people that work for the Post Office, those are their, that's their section. Because that's what the South African Post Office in its heydays did. And so on and so forth. So you don't have a problem. I know you're stressed, but phone your IR person. I promise you, even if we're not talking about this, send me a tweet. Send me whatever, all right? If you can't find your person, I'll find it, and I promise you I'll probably find them with one call, okay?
Okay. Can I have maybe your details? So that I could.
Okay, I'm gonna ask Masego to give you my number, but please only use it for the specific purpose we've agreed on. Yeah, no other person. So you say to me, I spoke to my IR. If you phone me and you haven't spoken to IR, or you phone me and you want to speak outside of that, I'm gonna be like, ah, Timby.
No, I promise.
Yeah, for that narrow aspect, I will help you gladly. All right, shall we go make some money? Okay, we're gonna go make some money. Lesejo, I see your call. Rato, I see your call. If you wanna also phone us now. If you phone K52, I get again. Always text 00 00 959. Yeah, because they like your voice, bro.
The Law Report with Michael Motsoeneng Bill.
Welcome back.
Technology. We must find out who employs who here, because that issue must be resolved.
This only thinks he's my employer, that's right. All right. 086-00-00959. Any questions in law that you might have for us? Lesejo, are you calling about a home loan? Good evening.
Hi, Hi, Advocate Lilo and myself.
Hello.
Hello.
And the last time I called, you never answered my question.
All right, we're gonna do our best to answer it now.
It's Mike.
Please. And I would like to know, what is a bridge of contract? Remember my problem, I took a home loan with the bank and they took an unauthorized policy on our name. Now, when we're making payments towards our bond account, the money never serviced the bond, the loan that you took. It only serviced the assurance policy that was taken on our name, unauthorized. So I would like to know, which is this a breach of contract on the bank side?
Okay, good. So, now, if we don't answer your question, you gotta say as in, you don't say bye bye. Which is when we finish, you want to say bye, and you're like, hi, I'm not saying it. So your question is not very difficult. If you look at your mortgage bond contract, it would say to you, we're gonna give you this bond, and you are required to have insurance, because we are going to give you 1 million rands, but when you die, we want to know that we are going to recover our 1 million rands. So you need to take insurance. That's what they say. That is that you then do in our favor, because they when you die, they don't want to cry with your friends, right? They want to be secured. So then they would have another line that says, where you don't give us insurance, proof of insurance, we are going to charge you for it. So in fact, they are not breaching the contract. They are taking their contract allows them to secure themselves. Okay.
Yeah.
So what you then do, if you don't like that, so they also can't force you to go with their insurance. So if you don't like their insurance, you need to go, hi guys, I have my own insurance. So let me explain this two ways. So if they've charged you for insurance, meanwhile you had insurance, you can then produce your proof of insurance and say, why did you charge me? I always had insurance. Then of the two, not necessarily your banks, of the two, you can make an election, and it would probably be the bank's one. So the bank and this other insurance would have to reach an agreement. Either they share the loss, in other words, they both give you 50-50, or the one bank that didn't have authorization gives you your money, right?
Okay.
So you'll get it back. So it's not a breach of contract. It's just that they owe you the value of your premiums going back in time. If you didn't have insurance, you then can go to them and say, okay, for the last 5 years, I didn't have insurance, but from today, I now have insurance, so stop doing this. And then they will, and they won't give you problems.
Okay. It's not the insurance, it's the assurance.
Assurance.
The assurance was not compulsory. The insurance was compulsory. And
you mean life insurance?
Yes,
right.
Yes.
Now, well, it is.
Instead of reducing my bond, nothing went to the reduction of my.
No. So I guarantee you that the insurance, actually, when I was answering you initially, I was talking about life insurance.
Yeah.
But you are talking about structural insurance, and even that they need insurance for. Mm. So there would be one for structural insurance where they insist that you protect the structure, and then the other one for life insurance that they protect themselves against your life. In fact, the one where the banks used to misbehave on is on retrenchment. So they'd make you pay a premium for when you are retrenched. And a lot of people got retrenched and didn't even know that they have this insurance. Right. So that's something that historically was something of a misbehavior. So I don't know what the situation is currently, but a lot of people are insured by various credit providers without knowing that. So this is the best that I can do to answer your question, which is in fact that there isn't in fact a breach of contract. If you look at the contract, they acted very much within the confines of the very contract you've entered into. And if you don't believe me, do me a favor, because this is the second time you are phoning, and then phone me the third time, in which case I will send you a bottle of wine to apologize. Or cool drink if you don't drink. And if you ask them, well, why did you take this money, and they can't refer you, and you say, please refer me, I phoned Kaya 959, and I said to them,
you are saying this, and they said I must ask you to refer me to the part of the contract that I signed that
no,
authorizes.
I took the matter to the bank's ombud, and the bank's ombud ruled in my favor. Yes, they said that the assurance was not supposed to have been credited. All along, I thought it was compulsory. So the bank's ombud said that they were not supposed to have credited that the premium. And the problem was that bank's ombud said that they can only pay 50% of the premium that is credited. And the total amount of the premium that is credited is 300,000 plus 15 years interest.
But why 50%?
I don't know. That's problem.
I think it goes to the point that I was making. But now I'm incredibly confused. It goes to the point that I was making to say you might have... The reason why the ombudsman would have ruled in your favor is because you say, I had insurance. Did you have insurance?
No, the insurance was compulsory. The problem is the assurance.
Right, right. Did you have assurance?
No, it was not compulsory.
Okay, I understand that. But I'm asking you, did you have assurance with some other service provider?
No, I didn't.
Why 50? Because why 50%? If you are in the right, in other words, if the deduction was not supposed to happen, you must get all your money. If it was supposed to happen, you must get...
Bank ombud said that I'm an unreasonable customer. I was supposed to have queried the credit of the assurance. And so because I never queried it,
I think what might be useful is if maybe Lesego can email the judgment of the ombudsman.
Yeah.
Then we can establish the facts from there, because I think we might be talking slightly cross purposes.
I think so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm very confused.
Yeah.
And it's not your fault. It's just that the story, I can't understand how the ombudsman could have acted in this case. It's incongruent with every single thing that I know about law.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even the advocate. Even the advocate. So okay, I concede we didn't answer your question because it's a little complex. But speak to Masego and let's see what the ombudsman said.
Yeah, let's get
a
copy of it.
Then we'll be able to offline tell you. Lilo, you want to do that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, because me now I've got the last call. Yeah. All right. Okay, so it's Kwena Lemlilo. Sharp. Lerato?
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you?
Well, and yourself?
I'm good. I have an issue with my neighbors, right?
Yeah.
We even went to court. We had, I think, four appearances.
Mm-hmm.
And then we somehow came to a settlement. So, the first week after signing the settlement, they started again. So basically, it's noise issue disturbances. We are being harassed by their guests. So it even went as far as in 2019, we were attacked part of the bottles. We had injuries and, cops were called. So it's a really big issue. But then after going to court, we signed a settlement agreement. The magistrate court said that they don't support settlement, so this would be a binding agreement. Then, just like I said, a week after, they started again and again this weekend. We were promised that we were going to be shot at. So I have audio recordings of that, but I know that's not going to stand in court or anything.
Why not?
But I thought, sorry?
Why do you know that?
They were recorded without their knowledge.
It's in the interest of justice.
Yeah, no, it doesn't actually work like that. Yeah. Okay. Need a shooter.
So this agreement was never made in order of court.
So it was filed in the court.
Yeah, yeah.
But the judge said that they don't accept settlement agreements.
So what did you understand that to mean?
I understood that to mean that it is filed. If anyone goes against the agreement, this case will just go back up if anyone goes and reports.
Yeah.
Because it was a harassment order.
Yeah. No. Yes. So courts are not, they're not for filing. Courts resolve disputes. If you had a dispute and you came to an agreement, they needed to make that an order of court. My suspicion is that they have in fact made it an order of court,
yeah,
because there's no file that's just there. And a nuisance complaint is not a matter, it's not a sort of a private matter, you know, it's yeah.
Or even if it wasn't met, to the extent that the settlement agreement exists and it's in the court file,
yeah,
either of the parties can still approach the same court to say, I now want this order to be made an order of court.
But I'm saying that if a magistrate comes to learn of a settlement,
yes,
and he can't say, oh, you know what, I'm just going to take this and put it in here.
Yeah.
For now, guys, go home and have some tea.
Yeah.
Because that dispute hasn't been resolved. He has to note that it's been settled, and that settlement is an order of court. And
yes.
You know, so I think that it is made an order of court, and it should have been made an order of court. So look into that. But what I understood you to be saying, Lerato, is that when somebody says they're going to shoot you, it's not a nuisance anymore.
Yes.
It's not harassment anymore.
It's a criminal offense.
It's a criminal offense. It's actually assault.
So from, I think, 2017, we've had a couple of incidents. So the first time we were almost rammed by cars. The second one, I said, the person's guests came, they pelted us with rocks and bottles because they were saying, why are we the only ones complaining? So we would post on the community group and they would say that we are now harassing them by...
Did you have any of these previous incidents? Did you report them to the police?
So that's when we went to the police to go report, and it was because they were damaging our wall. So after damaging our wall, we went to the police to say, okay, fine, these people are now banging on the wall. So they said, no, go to the courts, and then we just added all those different incidents. So we have...
The one that's in the settlement?
Yeah, so it's the friends that came and attacked us. We had the calls from the police every single weekend. We have
So we are running out of time, I'm afraid, Lerato. So short answer: go to the police. What they've done is a criminal offense. If you've recorded them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Give that to the police. And this thing about you can't record people without their consent, it doesn't always work. Okay?
Yep.
It's got exceptions. So if you say, if right now you swear at me, I'm going to record you.
Mm-mm-mm.
Right? I'm going to record you because I want to prove, because I don't want it to be my word against yours. It's not like a situation where I was like saying, hey, good morning, how are you? And then I've set you up and then we're having a commercial discussion and then when are you secretly taping me? Like Nixon. It's not that kind of a story. It's somebody committing a crime and you're recording them. Otherwise, all the road rage incidents would never be, because then you'd say, I didn't consent for you to take me a video. All right, so go to the police, you'll be fine. Lucas, hello.
Hi, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Okay, my story, I'm going to try and make it short.
Yeah.
I have an 8-year-old daughter with my ex-girlfriend. And we have a parental plan that was made a court order. But this parental plan is frustrating me as a father. Recently what has happened is that my ex-girlfriend, I'm told by one of her family members that she's using drugs and she lives with my daughter. My daughter got banned 3 times trying to make food for her younger sister. So I think now I've been staying with my daughter for about 2 weeks. I'm told that I will live with her for the rest of June. The mother is in some of the rehab in Houghton, which I don't know where. I get this information from her cousin. So I don't even know where to start to fight maybe for a full custody. I need advice. What can I do in this case?
I think, Mike, at some point we need to have a show to discuss this thing of custody and, you know, these terms that callers would throw around and what they mean and so forth and so on. But for present purposes, if there's an order of court that you say was a settlement agreement that determines the parental relationship and who has primary residence and care, when and how, there's an order that is there now. Its practical implementation is not possible because the mother is in a rehab. So it is, again, coming back to the issue of the best interest of the minor child. It is in the best interest of the minor child that the child stays with you until such time the mother is in a position to look after the child. If you are of the opinion that it is so important that the arrangement that you did earlier, which was now made an order of court, has to be varied for whatever reason that you might think is appropriate. You'll have to go to court to vary that order to accommodate the circumstances that you think are now obtaining presently that are necessary in the best interest of the minor child.
And I think now would be a good time. So if you brought some kind of application now and you said, I have this parenting plan and I want by the time the mother comes out, there has to be a different regime. And she has to come and prove to the court. So I want an interim order that allows me to deviate from the parenting plan, because effectively we have deviated.
Yeah.
Because I'm now living with the child because she's in rehab. And prior to that, there was these concerns about drugs. I want an interim order. When she comes out, she must satisfy the court why her drug use or won't interfere with the interest of the children, because the children, you have an imminent danger problem, potentially.
Really imminent.
You know, but particularly if children have burned three times. I mean, if a child burns once, it's one thing, but three times. So yeah. If you act now, get a lawyer now, fight for your kids, man. Nasi Pasantin.
Hello, how are you?
Well, and yourself?
I'm fine. Oh, I'm having a problem with APSA. I bought a house in 2000, and then the bond was paid up within 10 years. And then I bought another house. With this one, when they asked me to apply for an insurance, I didn't respond because the house was paid up, there was no need.
Yes.
With the other one, I've been responding. So after 9 years, I noticed that the sum of 8,726 was withdrawn from my account by APSA. When I speak my bank manager, because I was confused, I wasn't owing APSA, even the other house I'm not owing. What's happening? And then he checked and said, no, we are not owing APSA. So I reversed the withdrawal. So these people are still calling me today. They were saying I'm owing APSA 34,000. I said, no, I'm not owing APSA. The house was paid up a long time ago. They said it was before 20 years. Now it's 20 years. You're supposed to pay insurance. I said, what for?
Yeah, because that's madness.
And then I was telling them that the account I'm using is the account I've been using for more than 20 years.
When you pay off a bond, they need to remove the bond in the registrar of deed. Did they do that? Is the house now fully yours? Is the bond cancelled?
In the title. No, because I went to check
So they won't do it automatically. So your job, what I would do, forget this insurance thing, that's not your problem, that's their problem. If they got a problem, they must sue you, and I wonder how much of it would have prescribed.
Yeah.
Right? Because they're saying you owe them. They didn't take it from your account, if I understand.
Pardon?
They didn't take the money from your account, the 34,000.
No,
they are claiming it from
my account.
They took it.
In fact, they took 8,736, and then this year, January, it was 17,000.
Right.
April, it was.
Yeah, so I got to run. I've run out of time. But what I want you to do is, when you've paid up your bond, because it's going to give your kids a problem if you have any. When you paid up your bond, go and cancel the bond and have no relationship with the bank in as far as your house, because they have a bond right now. They can, you know, things can go wrong. I'm not saying banks are malified, but things can go wrong. So cancel the bonds, and if somebody says you owe them, they need to give you a statement to say, and then you need to invite them to sue you so that they can show you how that's owed. So I got to run. Nobizita, thank you very much, my man.
Anytime, brother.
Good show. And to you, it's been a good show. I loved your questions. I love your calls. Me and Mlilo are going to do this again soon. Good night.
The Law Report with Michael Motsoeneng-Bell
on Kaya 959.
On the street, on the air.